I was 15 years old when I started YouTube, so it was right before sixth form. When I was like 17, 18, I was making over a grand a month on my YouTube videos.
Jeez.
And then I just launched the business in October too. And in the first month of the business, I made £27,000 profit. My mindset was a little bit easier to trust and take a risk.
Why are you now in the property space?
I've always wanted to be in property. I've been a landlord since 2018.
What was it that made you agree to come and share what you're doing?
I just wanted to show people that after having success at a really young age and then going through a bit of a lull patch in my mid-20s, so like, oh, what do I do now? You can reignite it. I always stand by, you don't want to be 50, 60 years old or whatever and have the shoulda, coulda, woulda thing going on in your head.
How much have you turned over on the property business then over the last year?
In the last 10 months, turned over just over 110K.
So you got about 70K in profit.
Yeah.
How much time did you spend on average a week managing one property?
I'll tell you all four, about an hour.
An hour a week, 10 grand a month, an hour a week. How are you systemizing that? So your background's really interesting because you've been a YouTuber, now you're full-time in property, you've worked with some crazy people. I mean, at school, if you'd have told your teachers that you wanted to be a YouTuber and make hundreds of thousands of pounds on YouTube and be a property entrepreneur, I mean, did you know you wanted to do that at school?
Well, so I'll explain the story a bit. The story started, I was 15 years old when I started YouTube, so it was right before sixth form. And then the summer holidays hit, I was about to start sixth form. So I was basically juggling A-levels at the same time as doing YouTube. So I used to actually bunk off sixth form classes, run home, make YouTube videos because I was just in love with it.
And what year was this?
So this was 2012, I think, around 2012.
Yeah.
And yes, I used to bunk off sixth form classes, go back home, make YouTube videos. And then in the second year of sixth form, so I was 17, just turned 18 at this point, I hit 10K subscribers within like a few months and then got my first brand deal on YouTube. So when I was like 17, 18, I was making over a grand a month on my YouTube videos.
Jeez.
So at that age, that's a bit like crazy because you're school, you're a kid making that. And not from a job, from like making videos, playing FIFA.
Have you ever had a job, ever?
No. I just went straight into like starting my YouTube channel and stuff like that. And then it turned into a job, like my hobby turned into a job, basically. So yeah, 17, 18, making YouTube videos, making like decent money at that age on YouTube videos. And then obviously I was trying to get into uni at that point too. So I passed my A-levels, got into uni, but over the summer of just before joining uni, I was starting a business at the same time.
What was the business?
So I was making FIFA and football YouTube videos. So at the time, I only had about 30K subscribers. But the business, I saw a gap in the market in the FIFA scene where basically I just supplied. Do you know anything about FIFA? Probably not.
I know very little.
All right,
I used to play, what was it? EA Games.
EA Sports. So essentially, in a nutshell, I basically made another version of Ultimate Team, which is the biggest game mode on the game. But I just gave people a much better chance to get players and more money in the game rather than what EA did. Mm-hmm. So that I made a whole website about just that. So
you were like literally like 18, 19.
I just turned 18, yeah. So
How did you come up with the inspiration though behind this? It sounds...
Because I was a YouTuber and I was like an avid player of the game and I was like, there's a huge gap in the market here and there was a lot of complaints like EA do this, do this, do this, and they would never listen to like their fans or like their players. So then I was like, why don't I just make it myself and just try and provide a service for people. So I joined uni. That was like the start of October. So doing my university, running a YouTube channel, and then I just launched the business in October too. And in the first month of the business, I made £27,000 profit.
Wow.
While I was at uni. And that was crazy for me, like super surreal.
Well, that's an annual salary in a month when you're a teenager.
Yeah, so it was a bit difficult to juggle things. So basically I was just running my business in my uni classes.
Did you finish uni?
No, so
I was gonna say, that would, I knew you would say no.
Yeah.
That would kill your ambition to finish uni.
Yeah.
Learning at uni how to be a compliant good boy and how to get a job and what's the point? And work really hard and you'll get a degree and it will help you get a good job. And it's like, well, I don't really need a job.
Yeah, exactly. So October, well, say November now, £27,000 profit on top of the YouTube earnings that I was making. So I was like to my dad, I need to leave uni.
What were you studying?
animation and visual effects. So it was a bit different from like normal uni that you would imagine, like big lecture halls and stuff. It was only 20 of us, and we were actually, our lecturer was somebody who worked for Disney. So it was a bit better than the normal.
Nice. And you still quit.
So then he was like, are you sure? Because like I'm Indian. So like I'm like more of a Western Indian, but like Indian culture is like university. And then he was like, are you sure? So I was like, listen, Dad, sat him down one day when I went back home. These are the figures. And as soon as he saw that, he was like, son, go chase your dreams. Let me leave. So I lasted one term in uni, left Jan, then went full time on my business and YouTube full time. And then literally within about 4 months, shot up to 100K subscribers. So it was like about 70,000 subscribers in growth in like a few months.
Which... Was that like 27 grand? Was that a one-off month?
No. Then it was like more consistent. Obviously, I was more of like a first of its kind website at the time. So the first month was crazy. But then after that, it was still like about 15, 20K a month. But come around March, April time, I wanted to completely revamp the website, grow it to a much larger scale. So I was friends with a lot of FIFA YouTubers at the time, like Harry Rotashaw from The Sidemen. So I spoke to him. And he became one of the business partners.
He's like the guy that works with KSI.
So he's in The Sidemen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So he was your business partner.
Yeah. And at the time, he was the second biggest, probably, creator in the UK below KSI.
There's a lesson in that, though, which is a lot of people say to me, like, how do I get good people to work with me and collaborate with me? But be good yourself.
Yeah.
And let them find you.
Yeah, kind of. I was friends with him, to be fair, because I was in the scene and we would like collab sometimes on YouTube videos and that. Like, I would collab with all the different FIFA YouTubers. So when he jumped on board, that really exploded the company because he made a dedicated 10-minute video. It's not like the brand deals you see now, oh, shout out this company for 20 seconds midway through a video. He made a dedicated 10-minute video on our website and it got 10 million views.
Jeez.
So that's crazy, like, exposure. And then that completely exploded the company. Like, there was points where we were making like 15K a day when he did that. As soon as that video went live, the site crashed. So who knows how much we could have made. But
what were you doing with the money?
So I was partly investing at the time because I've always been into investing, just like stocks, crypto and things like that. And then I was saving up for property as well. And then living a young life too. So spending some of it. So it was a mix of everything. Fast forward a couple of years, I was about 19, 20 at this point. The company was doing really well. YouTube was doing really well. But then I like kind of fell out in love with YouTube a bit, which was, I try and say like, I don't have any regrets in life, but I wish I didn't stop YouTube. That was the one thing I wish.
Why would you stop that?
Everyone said that to me.
You just stopped enjoying it.
FIFA became worse and worse every year. I did transition to making real life football videos, which was a lot more fun. But the actual like core of my channel was FIFA still.
Do you know Glenn Kirkham?
No.
Because he was doing like football FIFA-y videos on YouTube and he got quite a big following and he's also joined the academy. And
oh, cool.
Done loads of stuff in property. I have to connect you with him.
Yeah, definitely. No, I don't know him. Yeah. But yeah, so the business had to shut down as well because basically EA kind of made quite a lot of like legal things about people making affiliate websites to the game. Mm-hmm. So then we just like, it was like, there's no point anymore. They're just cracking down too much.
Is it easier now to be a YouTuber or in 2012?
It's easier now to, in my opinion, to get followers and views and stuff now because that's why you see a million and one TikTokers and content creators. Now, like it's the most requested job in the world now. When you ask a kid, what do you want to be? It's a YouTuber. Everyone and them dogs a YouTuber now or like a content creator. But back then, you'd probably think, oh, well, there was hardly any competition back then. But in the FIFA scene, there was mass competition. There's probably less FIFA YouTubers now than there were back then.
Because of the regulations?
No. That was like in terms of like just making videos on the game.
Yeah.
So all of the FIFA YouTubers now that I knew back then have basically just gone into business and like become entrepreneurs and stuff like kind of like how I have. So yeah, I would say it's easier now to gain a following.
How did your crypto do?
It helped me buy my house with my fiance.
That's good.
I'm probably one of the only few people who's come on like Winners on a Wednesday and spoke about crypto that's actually had like a positive experience.
Well, because if you look at Bitcoin and Ethereum, they've done extremely well. They've outperformed pretty much every single stock.
Yeah.
Outperformed property.
Yeah.
Yes, they're volatile. Yes, you can lose money very quickly if you're emotional.
Yeah.
Or invest in the wrong cryptos. But I mean, it's undeniable.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's created more. I think more people have become millionaires. crypto than just about anything else.
Yeah, and that especially in the last few years, 100%.
Yeah.
So like back in 2018 or something, I invested 10K into Ethereum when it was, I don't know, around £500 or something like that, and then sold it for around 3.3 or something. So
3.3.
Okay. Like as in gain. So I invested 10K. So it was about like...
Are you, as in like 3x your money?
Yeah, it was about like 4 or 5. So then that paid for the deposit of my house with my fiance, because I moved to Newcastle now, obviously, from the accent. I'm originally from London, moved to Newcastle 2 years ago. So it was good.
How would you compare property then? So you've got like business, tech, crypto. Like, what are the pros and cons? What why are you now in the property space? What is it about kind of property that makes you passionate about it?
I've always wanted to be in property. So I was a landlord. I've been a landlord since 2018, partially because of my mum and nan passed away, but I don't want to get into a sob story. So one was inheritance and then one was a JV with my dad. So I've been a landlord for 6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always wanted to get into property, and the money that I was making from the businesses back in the day, I was literally just saving to buy properties. But then obviously things happen in life, so I couldn't at the time buy like as early as I wanted to. I've just always, eventually, the end goal is wanted to either be full-time in property or as well as still have one of my like techie businesses or like a business that I'm super passionate about. But the end goal has always been property.
A lot of people I speak to, though, that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
That they're doing, I speak to people that are making a lot of money, whether it be crypto, techie, influencers, fintech, whatever. But a lot of people's end goal is property. I don't know why. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. It's just owning assets is a different feeling, if that makes sense, rather than like, I don't know, working a job or something like that, or investing in stocks and that. You own like the properties. You can do what you want to them. They're like your babies.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, because if you own a piece in someone else's company, if you own shares in a company, even if it's S&P 500, it's very safe, it's spread out. You don't have any control. You can't force the value up.
Yeah.
It's a good investment.
Yeah.
I think it's a very solid investment. But yeah, I think people like owning properties that they know will outlive them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the chances are, if you look at companies, if you've got shares in, look at, what was the name of the, is it Nikon, the camera?
Yeah, yeah.
They had 90% equity share in their entire photography business. And then suddenly, boom, they went bust because smartphones started introducing cameras. So I think with businesses, even companies like Amazon, will Amazon be around in 200 years? Maybe, maybe not. But will this house be around in 200 years? Yeah, of course it will.
Exactly.
And this land will still be here.
100%.
The best investment on the planet is the planet.
Yeah, exactly, you know?
Certainly, that's what I mean. I would say that because I'm a property guy.
Yeah.
So how did you transition to property then? I know you said that you kind of dabbled a little bit. You got a few properties that you bought, inherited. Yeah. But right now, you're like full-time in property.
Yeah, so I've always worked for myself basically since 17. So I was juggling, mid-20s, I was juggling when I stopped the business and YouTube. Right, what do I get in now? I tried a few more startups and was just let down by...
What did you try?
Pardon?
What did you try?
Different businesses in the football scene. So like a fantasy football website and things like that. And although they... basically, right before I joined the academy, I was working with my business partner for about 4 months developing like an AI... a fantasy football website, and it was basically to a point where it was ready to launch. We'd signed with Opta, which is like the biggest stats, or like the Premier League and all the biggest leagues in the world use Opta for their stats. So we signed with them for the data, and this guy I've known for 10 years, he was the first developer for my original business. Gone. Somebody, he came to my engagement party.
Really? You just ghosted you?
Basically for a month while we were signed into a contract with Opta. And then I was actually speaking to Chris about this when I was in the process of joining the academy. I was like, this is what's happened. And he was like one of my best mates, and it was a big shock. But anyway,
What did you learn from that?
This is what made me join the academy. I was like, I came to the crash course last summer with my fiance, the £1 crash course, and we absolutely loved it. Like the energy was mental. So then I booked onto the advanced learning, like a couple more of the courses. And then when I came to them, that was around September time. That was when we were meant to launch the new company, like go live with it. And I was speaking to Chris, and then I just had a realization. I was like, do you know what? I'm going back to the basics of when I was 17 years old. I didn't start with anybody. I'm just going to start this by myself, like the property stuff. I just want to go back to not relying on anyone.
Right.
So I was sick of relying on people because they just let me down. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? Forget all this. I'm going back to starting something on my own where I don't need to rely on anyone.
Mm.
And then when I came to the advanced training, it was amazing. Like the, I'm not even like tooting your horn or anything like that. I'm serious. Like the energy was great. I learned so much because at the time I'd only known buy to let.
Yeah. I think it's the people as well, isn't it? Like
100%.
When people are there doing deals on the phone, everyone's there to make money.
Yeah. Do you know what I loved so much about it as well? It wasn't like traditional, like uni or going to school where you sit down and just write, and or they play a video, like some random video. You made us do stuff like on the spot. That's the difference. Practical. You learn everything from practical.
The way I see it, because I never went to uni, so I can't compare.
Yeah.
But I did learn to drive. And if I'd have gone to learn to drive and the driving instructor would have said, here's how you drive, and it talked to me for hours and then gone, right, see you next week, I'd be like, I want to drive.
Yeah.
And I think that in the same way, when people come on a property investment training program, yeah, it's important that you teach them and you tell them and you give them the academic information, but people want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, right, here's what you do. If I say to people, you know what it's like because you're on the academy, if I say to people like, let's show you how to find the lead. And then I find it and I go, there's a lead. Everyone in the room's like, call them!
Yeah, literally.
And I'm like, all right, let's call them. Yeah. Like, people want that.
Yeah.
People need to see that.
Because it helps build confidence too.
Yeah.
That's probably what most people are scared of. Like, they don't have the confidence to do it or when you're...
But they'll tell me, they'll be gassing me up, go, oh, call them. And I'm like, all right. And I'll call them and they'll be like, now it's your turn.
Exactly.
And everyone's like, oh, no. And then suddenly people need to go to the toilet or, oh, no. Get your phones out, ready, go. And you're just forced. And when you do that, there's great bonding in it, isn't it? Like in Uganda, when we take people out to Uganda, we make them... Are you coming to Uganda?
No.
Oh, you have to, bro.
Yeah, I'll definitely.
Come out one of the years. Yeah. But we make people... Well, I say make. That's a bit strong. We strongly encourage people to do a bungee jump.
Yeah.
And when a group of people get together and are scared out their brains, but do it, it's amazing in so many ways, but also the sense of but the bond between the group is huge because everybody stepped out of their comfort zone together.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
So yeah, but where what's the difference between you said about I need to do it on my own. I can't rely on people. But then that's slightly almost against in a way what we teach on the academy, which is no one can do this on your own. You need to be in a community. Where's the difference?
So I don't mean like that. I mean as in. Right. In order for me to start something now, I have to have a business partner next to me. Like, okay. That's what I meant. Not by like collaborating or anything. Collaborating is massive. Like JVs are massive. 100% fully for all of that. I meant just, I want to start this by myself where I don't need to rely on a developer who was my business partner at the time to make the website or to do something like that.
Having
that's
like
what
a
I meant.
Crutch almost or being out of control because you're totally reliant on
exactly.
somebody.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's important. And it's an important lesson as well because some people are reliant on somebody or even reliant on getting someone's permission. Oh, I need my parents' permission to do this. And it's like, well, that's going to lead to a lot of resentment on your end. If you go to uni for 5 years and then you get a job and you do something to please somebody else, ultimately, you're going to end up being very resentful.
Yeah, 100%. Thankfully, I haven't suffered with any of that. Like my family, well, my dad, fiance, in-laws, they're all like my biggest fans. So it helps a lot when you have a really supportive like family back home. So
how much have you turned over on the property business then over this last year?
Cool. So in the last 10 months when I started the SA company, since then I've turned over just over 110K.
That's brilliant.
That's like just complete bookings.
How much of that is profit?
It's quite high, about 70%, 60, 70%.
Very good. Yeah. So you got about 70K in profit.
Yeah.
Which is not bad for your first 10 months, bro.
I know. Yeah. It was a good start. That's across. I originally had 5 SAs. I got rid of one. So now across 4 SAs.
Mm. And you just sold one of your houses?
Yep. Sold one of the properties in London. And now I'm going to start what I call phase 2 of the growth of the company, which is the BRRs and stuff. So the first year was the SAs. Now it's the BRR to SA.
Why did you sell that property?
So that property is based quite close to here, like in Langley. It was a 2-bed apartment and it was making me about 3 to 4K profit a year. because the service charge was about 3-4k. Ground rent and landlord and buildings and terrorism insurance was about 500-600 quid. Then after like the little taxations and that, when things go wrong and stuff like that, I was left with like 4k a year. And I was,
why did you buy it?
So that was the JV with my dad,
right?
Because all we knew back then was buy to let.
Yeah,
that's it. Buy to let. The one property that I gained for inheritance isn't just mine, so that I don't even like include that with anything. That's controlled by like four people, so I don't even like count that in my portfolio. But yeah, it was that's all we knew, man. Buy to let.
Buy to let though is a terrible way to make money.
I hate it.
Yeah,
now it I is hate
a
it.
Terrible way to make money. And you said about like, you love property, it's like your babies and all that. But if your babies. If you've got properties and they're not really making any money,
yeah,
I mean, yeah, it might be beating inflation just about.
Yeah,
it might be holding its value and going up in capital appreciation. But I mean, there's so much better things to invest in.
Yeah.
So what are you wanting to do with the money that you've made? What's the strategy? What have you, with your techie brain, what do you think is the best way? I mean, how much did you get when you sold that property? How liquid are you right now from that?
About 100k.
100k. So what's the best way to invest £100,000?
Because I'm in Newcastle, there's a little bit more of an advantage. So I can get properties so much cheaper than down south. So I'm buying...
But you still invest in Newcastle and live down south?
Yeah.
So, but you don't sound from Newcastle.
No, I moved to Newcastle 2 years ago. So I'm originally from London.
Why did you move?
I just absolutely love Newcastle. And my fiance is from Newcastle. She lived with me in London. She didn't live in Newcastle. But... Yeah. I just always felt
it
like,
is nice.
Yeah, like you're super close to the beach.
Beautiful city.
Amazing. It's so underrated.
It's a tiny bit cold.
Yeah, that's the only thing. It's a little bit cold, but
it's beautiful.
You're super close to the beach, like amazing.
And it's such a popping city.
Oh, yeah.
People don't realise.
But
so is like Liverpool or Manchester and some of the other northern cities. They're really good for investment, but also quite cool places to live.
Yeah, so now... you probably know Newcastle got taken over by the Saudis a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So I think now what's happening with Newcastle is what happened with Manchester when Man City got taken over, and Manchester just like completely transformed the whole city. Not obviously not just because of that, but it helped a lot. I think that's kind of now happening with Newcastle because of the big takeover, and football culture is huge there. There's so much development going on. Loads of brand new like leisure things, entertainment things are getting built, housing. So... it's really starting to expand now. So I think it's a really...
Did you see my video I did recently? The top 10 places to invest?
Slightly. I think I did a little bit. I can't remember.
You might have missed Newcastle because Newcastle was in there, bro.
Yeah.
I think it was really high up as well. Was it like number 3?
Number 2? Number 1.
It was close.
Yeah.
It was high.
That's good then.
So yeah. So 100 grand.
Yeah.
How would you best... suggest investing £100,000 based on all your experience and what you've done so far? Well, how are you going to invest that?
I'm going to invest it into BRRs. So I'm going to find properties that the standard way that need doing up, either get a JV or bridging on it, do them up, and then refinance it, pull the money out, and then rinse and repeat. Unless the flip is insane, like the amount of like profit on it is insane, then I'll flip it. But I want to kind of retain all of them and then just run them as SAs. But
are you looking right now at those types of properties? Are you searching at the moment?
Yeah, well, the property sale only just went through. So the property sale was meant to go through in April. I got dragged along by solicitors. Yeah, it happens. So it postponed a lot of things. So I didn't really want to keep looking, like ready to put an offer. And then three months later, I still haven't sold the thing.
Yeah.
So now I finally sold
it. Got the cash, ready to move.
So now I've started.
And now you can offer, when you're a cash buyer, you can buy a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
And you can buy the types of properties that most people can't.
Yeah.
Because if you're looking for a rundown property, it's probably unmortgageable. Therefore, first time buyers can't buy it.
Yeah.
Therefore, even buy-to-let investors can't buy it because you can't get a mortgage on it. So if you buy cash, maybe top it up with bridging a little bit, increase the value, fix it up, then get a mortgage on it.
Yeah.
You're getting your money back, or at least most of it, and then renting out serviced accommodation. What have you learned about serviced accommodation then? What have been some of the hardships and challenges, and how have you overcome those?
So I would say the main hardship has come from the property that I got rid of, because I was making very good money on the property, but still decided to get rid of it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How much were you making on it?
About 1 to 2K profit a month.
You're making 1 to 2 grand profit every month, but you just decided to get rid of it.
Yeah. So the reason why, you're probably thinking you're crazy. The reason why is I've got 3 houses in Newcastle and then 2 apartments that are in Morpeth, which is Northumberland, but only 15 minutes away, right? And one of the apartments last winter in the northeast, there was a lot of storm damage and stuff like that. So the property started to leak and a lot of damp started to happen. And obviously these are rent-to-rents. The landlord tried her best to fix them. But then I started to get like a few negative comments from guests that were staying in. And that's one thing like I super pride myself on, like they're getting any kind of bad review and things like that is a no-go because I know the properties are in really good condition. Mm. But when you get bad reviews for something like that, which is super impossible to control when you've tried...
Fix your whole account.
Yeah. So thankfully, I didn't get any bad reviews. They were because I try and be a good host and stuff like that.
Are you super host yet?
No, I'll try to explain that in a minute. No, there's a reason why. There's a reason why.
Okay.
There's a reason why. Because I feel like I'm a good host, they would message me privately. Like, I don't want to leave a bad review, but I'm just telling you privately. And I was getting this in 1 month, it was around March or something. I was getting this nearly every single guest staying at that property. And I was like to the landlord, listen, like, I've told you multiple times. I know you tried to fix it, but it just wasn't getting fixed.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I care about my reputation way more than a couple grand profit. So I packed that one in.
Good.
Gave
good
it back.
For you. I understand. I think that there's a good business lesson there.
Yeah.
It's okay to leave money on the table sometimes.
Yeah.
And reputation is more important than anything.
Exactly that. So the reason why I'm not a super host yet is because I convert about 90% of the bookings into direct. That's why I don't actually...
How do you do that and why do you do that?
You've got to be a little bit smart because obviously at the end of the day, Airbnb, Booking.com and that take their commissions and stuff like that. My little trick is say I get a booking inquiry for 5K. Yeah. After the 18% or whatever that Airbnb take, for example, that's about, say, 3.8K in my pocket. The guest is still paying £5,000. I'm getting 3.8K. So I contact the guest and I'm like, listen, I can offer you a much more discounted rate if you book direct with us. How does £4,750 sound to you? Obviously, they're going to be like, yeah, because they're getting £250 discount. So then they just book direct with me instead. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty much as simple as that. You just got to word things a little bit differently to get them on the phone or like get an email across.
You can't say this over Airbnb because Airbnb will close your account down.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't always like work. Some people say no, but for all the long-term ones have all been pretty much direct because of that. I sometimes allow... I don't really cater for short terms, but I have like rules set. So for example, say in one week, one of my apartments isn't booked up or one of the properties isn't booked up. You can book for like 2-3 nights, but then after that, it's just long-term only settings. So I allow it sometimes for those, just so I can get reviews in on those platforms still to like maintain it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, everything's direct.
Mm. I remember when I booked an Airbnb in, what country was it now? I think it might have been Ghana. And I paid on booking.com.
Yeah.
And then the guy contacted me afterwards and was like, oh, can you ask for a refund and then book it again? But don't, and I was like, bro.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't push it, can you? You just,
yeah.
But if you can do it in a smart, kind of subtle way.
Yeah, exactly.
It means more money in your pocket, more money in their pocket, just less money in Airbnb's pocket. But I'm sure they don't mind. They're the biggest hotel industry in the world without actually owning any hotels.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you deal with like, your cleaners and stuff, because I think that's the biggest thing, isn't it? Like having someone that can go in the property in between viewings, make sure it's okay, check for any damage, clean it. And a lot of cleaners, they haven't got the right mentality of being a host.
Yeah.
And it's, how do you train them and how do you find them?
So this is the power of the academy. You know Declan from the academy.
Of course. Declan Archer.
No, Declan Murphy. The doctor. The doctor.
Really good guy.
Yeah. He was on Winners on Wednesday and stuff. So when I joined the academy, very quickly I became friends with him. Just potluck, he was sitting next to me at one of the trainings and he's from Newcastle. So anyway, got talking, now I've become really good friends with him. So when I first started everything, I was obviously speaking to him and getting advice of him because he has essays and stuff. And he just gave me his cleaning company and they are insane.
Wow.
I just got lucky with who I knew in that one. I can't even say anything else. They're amazing. Every little thing, thankfully too much hasn't gone wrong, but if there is like a guest has dropped a drink on the rug or something, they phone me and say, you might need to get a new rug. But in terms of like toiletries, presentation of like, just put in a throw in a nice way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Things like that. That's where you can, that's where you set yourself apart from the competitors.
It makes a massive difference having good cleaners.
Mm-hmm.
And I think power team, having a good network, obviously knowledge,
yeah,
being able to systemize the business. How much time do you spend on average a week managing one property?
I'll tell you all four, about an hour.
An hour a week?
But two to a push if I have to go in and do something quickly. But
jeez.
It's... So, sometimes when I speak to like friends and family when I was first starting, they're like, yeah, but like property, you have to go there all the time and stuff. And then I was like to them, this is how much I spend. I don't think they believed me, but literally 2 hours, because that's where systemization is so important. Mm-hmm. Like the channel manager.
Yeah, I've got a guy comment recently. I posted a video with, do you know Jack?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Posted a video with Jack and he was saying he's got, I don't know how many essays he's got, loads of essays, financially free, making thousands of pounds a month with essays. And this guy commented and he was like, oh yeah, but it takes 10 times as much trouble to manage it. And I thought, number one, that's not the case at all. It depends how you manage it.
Yeah.
It can be.
Yeah.
But it can be. I think, in my personal experience, I find it more passive having a serviced accommodation than I do having a family home.
100%.
It's more passive.
Yeah.
And the income is more massive.
Yeah, exactly. That's right? A great way to put it.
And it's more tax efficient. And.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what the heck are you talking about? And then the interesting thing is I clicked on this guy's profile and guess what he does? He does Airbnb and I'm like, what? Maybe he does management and he wants everyone to know how difficult it is. I don't know what he does, but it's just mad. It's this narrative of Airbnb, oh, it's so tough. Oh, parties. Oh, it's like, well, no. If you've got a family in there, they're more likely to trash it than people are on Airbnb.
Literally, 100%. I had way more problems with my buy-to-let than I have ever had with Airbnb. It's not even close.
Do you think they'll legislate it? Obviously, they will legislate to a degree, but do you think that it will be game-changing? Or, I mean, you've had that previously with your FIFA business when EA...
Mm-hmm.
brought in regulations and legislation which affected your business.
Yes.
What are your predictions? You're a smart person with the potential regulations in the UK.
I hope they don't get super strict, but hopefully they would, even if they did do something like that, hopefully they have enough respect for the people that make a living of this already. Like there's a lot of people who do Airbnb service accommodation full time, for example. So if you already, you know, like how the HMO rules and that, people who already had a HMO, they were like less strict on them.
Yeah, because it's a planning issue. So yeah. If they say that you now need to get planning permission, then there's something which is like historic planning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're exactly right. With HMOs, they said from now on.
Yeah.
But if you're previously doing it, then you have the grandfather rights, which could happen with service accommodation for sure. Or it might be that the regulation... I mean, I know what Labour are talking about at the moment is having like a list. So basically, you have to have a license to do it.
Yeah,
which is actually a good thing.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
It would stop all the cowboys.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then if you've got a license, but you're doing really bad things and you're getting constant complaints from neighbours and then they'll take away your license.
Yeah, that's probably better for the people doing it right.
It is.
Yeah,
I hope that happens.
Yeah,
because then you won't get every man and his dog trying to stick properties on Airbnb.
Yeah,
because it'll be like, no, you need a license.
Mm-hmm.
It might cost you £100 to get a license. Oh, I don't want to do that.
I'm totally for that.
Yeah, I'm totally for that.
Yeah,
and I'm totally for the planning as well. If you have historic rights, or if they make it easy, like with HMOs, they introduced C4, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then they said you can change C3 to C4 with permitted development rights. Mm-hmm. But then certain councils would then go, "Well, not in this council, you can't." And it's slowly. So yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are scared. Ultimately, you've got to be prepared and you've got to be diversified.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing BRRs, that might be a different story. I mean, with me, I'm doing hotels.
Yeah.
BRR hotels, but there's C1 anyway. So unless they ban hotels.
Yeah.
They're not going to ban Airbnb.
Nah.
They might just bring some restrictions in place. Because at the moment, I could have a dollhouse outside in my garden and I could rent it out.
Yeah,
exactly. Which is mad.
Things like that is a bit different.
Yeah. And fire regulations. And
yeah.
It's just... They do need to bring in rules.
Yeah.
Biggest tip on systemization then? Because if you're spending 1 hour a week on average managing your properties, which are making you, how much profit? About 7-8 grand a month?
7.5 on average, but the last 5 months have been about 10.
Jeez. Okay. Yeah. 10 grand a month, an hour a week. How are you systemizing that? You've got cleaners. What else?
Uplisting and Price Labs have been a game changer for
me. What does Price Labs do? Why is that so good?
So at the start, when I first started, I didn't have any of Price. I didn't have Price Labs set up. So I was getting random 2-3 bookings 2 months in advance and stuff like that, clogging up my whole calendar. So as soon as I learned about Price Labs, I'd basically set up rules for people to book. So if it's from the current date, so say today to 1 week in the future, you can book your 2-3 nighters just to get bookings across last minute. But if it's anything above one week, so 7 days to 14 days, the minimum night stays 14 days. And then after 14 days, the minimum night stays 21 days. As Brilliant. Soon as I implemented that, the amount of long-term inquiries I would get, because my calendar isn't randomly booked up in mid-December.
Yeah, you suddenly get a booking on Christmas Day and you're like, oh, great.
Exactly.
One night booking on Christmas Day and you forgot to change the pricing structure.
Because you don't even come up on the searches, obviously, if something's booked up. That transformed my whole company. So that was step one. So since then, I've basically only had long terms in all of the houses. The apartment's a bit different because it's like city centre, more Perth. It's a bit more like short term stays. I've had a few long terms, but it's a bit more short term. And then uplisting has been amazing, like in terms of managing everything, especially with the cleaners. As soon as a booking comes in, they just tick, I don't ever need to speak to them unless something goes wrong. Well, they send me pictures and stuff, but like pretty much that's it in a nutshell. You just need the 2-3 right software set up and then...
What have been the best aspects to being part of the academy?
The education, for me specifically, the education and the things I learned. Because like when I joined, all I knew was buy to let. As soon as I came to the rent to rent and SA training, I was like open to a whole new world. So the education 100% is amazing. I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but it's basically like an unscam uni.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
What do you mean by that?
Because when you go to uni, as you've probably already spoke about of many people, you get trained by people who, say you do business or whatever, you get trained by people who haven't had businesses or don't have businesses, like not in a bad way, but they're like a uni lecturer, but they've actually had no experience probably in running a business.
Yeah.
I was a little bit different, luckily, because I was trained by somebody from Disney. My scenario is a little bit different. But you're just half the time now, like a few of my cousins have gone to uni and stuff recently, and they just play a video and you just sit there writing notes all the time. That's you don't learn like that. You need to practically do stuff. That's where you make us do things at the training.
Yeah.
That's what helped me a lot.
Interestingly though, when you tell your parents you're joining the academy, not your parents, but generally, it sounds like a scam. And it's actually quite the opposite, because it's like the education system is arguably a scam.
Yeah.
Because getting, as you said, going to business university and learning from people that have never had a business, that at best is a fake teacher.
Yeah.
So, yeah, madness.
Thankfully, with me, I probably had more of a similar... start to business like we started both when we were very young, so I wasn't like the traditional way, so like my mindset was a little bit easier to trust and take a risk. My whole life has been on taking risks.
That's because you're not brainwashed.
Exactly,
that's why. You've lived a bit, you've done a bit,
and
you're smart enough to be able to make a rational decision. It's like when I went to Hyde Park in London trying to give away a free house and everyone was like not interested. Mm-hmm. They're brainwashed. They can't actually think logically and okay, you're saying you're going to give away a free house. Let me see the contract. Interesting. Let me get a lawyer to look at this. They can't think that way.
Yeah.
They just think, oh, it sounds like a scam. I don't know. I'm busy. I'm on my way to work. So it's mad. But, well, I'm really excited, mate. And it's been a real pleasure having you on the academy so far. And
it's been great.
I really appreciate it. What was it that made you agree to come and share what you're doing?
I just wanted to show people that after having success at a really young age and then going through a bit of a lull patch in my mid-20s, so like, oh, what do I do now? You can reignite it, or like you can even start again. Like at the time I had, like I said, I was working on a business and then bang, the next day it wasn't going to launch anymore. And then I was like, what do I do now? You can start at any single time. You don't want to be, I always stand by, you don't want to be 50, 60 years old or whatever and have the shoulda, coulda, woulda thing going on in your head. Like that. When I left uni, they made me do an interview for like when I left. And that's exactly what I said then 10 years ago. And that's what I'm saying now. don't have a mindset of, oh, I could have done this and look back being regret. Just do it and your life can change so fast and you can learn so much and it's just beneficial in every aspect, just taking a bit of a risk.
Yeah. Well, bro, thanks so much for coming and sharing. And
thank you for having me, man. Thank you so much.
Welcome.